Welcome to the first ever episode of Planet of Mystery.
Woo! You bang.
What?
Anyways, we're going to be talking about
H.H. Holmes and
Jack the Ripper.
And we're also going to discuss the conspiracy theories.
So keep listening to hear the theories.
H.H. Holmes,
who was born as Herman Webster Mudgett. So he was born on May 16th of 1861. He was born in Gilmington, New Hampshire. He had a wealthy family, and a lot of things remark that he was unusually smart for his age. Like, he was really smart. He was bullied in school, though, like, really bad. These kids found out that he was scared of doctors. And he was, like,
isn't that called, like, white coat syndrome or something?
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so he was bullied in school. They found out that he was afraid of doctors, and so he was actually, like, drugged into a doctor's office, and they, like, forced him to stand in front of a human skeleton that was on display in this doctor's office, because apparently that was, like, common.
Okay, but was it, like, a doctor's office?
Yeah, it was a doctor's office, and they had a skeleton.
I got her at school, and they sent you to the nurse.
No, like, these kids, like, forced him into a doctor's office. Oh. Like, they were bullying him. But, so after they made him stand in front of the skeleton, I guess they did it, like, so long or so many times that he actually began to get comfortable with it. And this is where everyone that I have read believes his obsession with, like, the human body and death actually begins when he's still in grade school. At the age of 11, one of his friends died by falling off a landing. Now, there's a lot of speculation. There's no proof of this, but people, you know, created kind of another little mini theory. He pushed this kid, and this was his first killing, because supposedly he was close to where the boy was standing. So it's thought that he pushed the kid. I don't know.
Landing like a stair landing?
It didn't specify if it... I think the way they made this out, like a railing.
Oh, okay.
Like a landing. I don't know. But, so supposedly he pushed this kid, and this is his first murder. So, we go back to he was super smart, right? He graduated high school at 16. So, he's, like, really smart. So, after he graduates high school, he changes his name to Henry Howard Holmes, which later becomes H.H. Holmes.
Bah, bah, bah.
So, he studied medicine at the University of Vermont first, and then he transfers to University of Michigan.
Shout out to Michigan.
I just want to take a second to the documentary that I watched about this, like, really gassed the University of Michigan up about their medical program. They had, like, the biggest and the best program, like, at the time that he was in school. So, whatever. Tips to Michigan. So, while he is attending the University of Michigan as a medical student, preparing to become a doctor, he starts stealing cadavers.
Ew.
Yes. I don't know how this went undetected for so long, but, like, he steals multiple cadavers over the course of his duration.
How do you just walk out of a building with a whole body?
I mean, don't know.
People were probably bringing them in all the time.
So maybe he posed as someone? I don't know. But he just was stealing them.
Just imagine waking up and being like, I'm going to steal a body today.
Let me just steal a body.
But it's even worse. So he steals these cadavers, he burns these bodies, and disfigures them beyond recognition. And then he stages it like it's an accident. He takes out an insurance policy on these cadavers, like they're actual people. I mean, they are actual people, but not like alive, you know what I mean?
Okay,
so he plays it like they're alive.
How does he know who they are to get insurance policy?
They probably have a record and stuff, like, when they're donated.
Isn't a cadaver, like, they get donated because people didn't claim them?
That, or because people donate their body to science. But they usually have a file on who this cadaver is.
I was just gonna say, because I, like, SVU or something, they're always, like, Jane Doe's or John Doe's. Like, it are cadavers. They're famous.
I'm sure he can, like, make a
I'm sure, yeah, like, if he's doing all these scams that I'm about to tell you about, I'm sure he easily fabricated fake names
and
IDs.
He's as smart as he says he is.
Yeah. So, like, he had this shit. I don't know how or why, but he did. So he, you know, takes out these life insurance policies, burns and disfigures them beyond recognition, and then goes and plants them like an accident, waits for someone or police or whatever he found, and then he goes and takes out the insurance policy, collects the money from their death. And he did this multiple times. So this is how he became, like, wealthy. This is what made him wealthier. Yeah, yeah.
Is that a word?
Wealthier,
yeah. So he does this all while he's in school. So in 1884, this is when he passes his medical exam. He becomes a doctor. The following year, in 1885, is when Holmes actually makes the move to Chicago. He starts working in a pharmacy as Dr. Henry H. Holmes. So during his time of him working at the pharmacy owner dies. And he leaves the pharmacy to his wife instead of Dr. Holmes. Well, somehow Holmes convinced this widow to let him buy the pharmacy. Probably promised her lots of money for her to get out of it. I don't know. Did she ever actually agree to let him buy it? No one knows because she was never seen again. So after this happened, she was never seen again. Holmes claimed that she moved to California after she sold it to him, but this has never been verified. Was that his first Chicago victim? Was the pharmacy owner his first Chicago victim? No one actually knows. So if we're counting track right now, if we count the kid from his childhood and possibly the pharmacy owner and possibly this widow, he's already killed three people in his life.
And he's how, like, roughly how old?
Let me see. So this is in
18. He was like 11 when he did the kid, right?
Let me do some math real quick. I'll tell you how old it is. So he was born... Okay, so this is 1885. He was born in 1861.
I can't do math like this.
He was 24. 24 years old. That's really weird, because that's like, Sean's 24.
Yeah.
So by time, this dude was the age of my brother-in-law. He's already killed three people. Like, what? Mind blown. Okay. So all this happens. A couple years after he's owned the pharmacy for some time, he acquires the money in 1889 to buy the lot across the street, which is where he builds what is known as the castle. Now, during construction...
Murder!
Isn't it a hotel, though?
Yes, yeah, so it's actually a hotel, but it's...
It's called Castle.
It covers a span of, like, two or three blocks, and, like, the architect of this, like, has, like, the little castle. Like, let me show you a picture of it, and we can post this picture on our Facebook and Instagram page.
Check out our Instagram and Facebook at Planet of Mystery.
That way people can also see what this place looked like and why it gets the castle name. Just, like, the style that it was built. Like, that's why they call it the castle.
Like a castle structure.
Yeah.
Kind of. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's what it looked
that's
like.
That's huge.
It is. It's, I mean, it was three stories, you know, covered a couple blocks. Maybe two blocks. It looks like two blocks. And it was right at an intersection. So, like, it was a very big building. During the time that he was having the castle built, he hired and fired crews at random and stuff so that no one could actually figure out what was being built. Because you gotta think all the things that you guys already know he's having built into it, which I'll discuss in a minute. So he didn't pay these crews for their work, for their supplies, for the materials, for the furniture. He actually gets a couple lawsuits later in life for this. Well, in a couple years, not even later in life, a couple years, he's getting sued for all this because he never paid these people. It takes them 2 years to complete it. So 1891, the murder castle is complete, open for doors. So the first floor includes several stores. It's kind of the storefront of the building. Then you go up to the second and third floor, which is where Holmes's office was. There was over 100 rooms in this building. The rooms were soundproof. Some of them had gas lines to them. Trap doors, there were peepholes, and there were staircases that literally went nowhere. You would walk up a staircase and in, like, dead into a wall.
I don't like staircases anyways.
Yeah, probably. Like, see? Exactly. You think you're escaping, so you open the door and take the stairwell and bam, wall, knocked out, you dead.
Face.
Because you'd hit the wall and then roll down the stairs, yes, and I'm going downstairs.
It's not
bad. It hurts. I didn't want to get back up.
Yeah.
You would have just laid there.
So, and there was also chutes all over the castle that went to the basement. Now, the basement is where all the creepy stuff happens.
Like most basements. Basements are just creepy.
Yeah.
So, I like the basement.
It depends. I feel like my basement's not that creepy, but
I used to have a basement as a bedroom. Your mom liked it.
Yeah, same.
It was nice.
So the basement is where his lab is. This is where he is dissecting people on the table, like using them as his own personal cadavers. He was known to take organs from them, sell them on the black market. He would also take out insurance policies on these bodies and do the same thing that he was doing in the beginning.
Such he still a scammer.
Yes, he was such a con. He had like a stretching rack where he would like skin these bodies and turn around and sell the bones to a medical school because it was expensive. They're still expensive to buy. To find an actual human skeleton, like to put on school, like a university, is expensive. So he was doing that. He was killing people and then, you know, cleaning it all up and selling the skeletons to the medical schools and making bank. And like no one questioned this because, you know, it was hard to find. You were like, cool.
Oh, I'll take anything.
Yeah, like literally. Yeah, exactly. So like no one really questioned it, which I thought was strange. He also had his own crematory down there. So he would burn these bodies to ashes. You can't identify them anymore. He also had an acid bath that he would also put bodies in. So depending on what he was feeling that day, you were either going to the crematory.
Bodies.
No. You were either going to the crematory or
okay,
you were
going
but
to I an said
acid
she
bath.
Said bodies too.
Well. But wouldn't it smell? Like, cause you know when you like, not to be weird, but like when you burn bodies,
something.
It
yeah.
smells.
I guess it was like an encased, I guess it's similar to what they use in funeral homes. Like, you know, why when you walk in funeral homes, you don't smell it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He had something similar
to
that.
Do they burn bodies in funeral homes?
Yeah.
Some funeral homes have a crematory, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, to top off, on top of everything that he had that was already really creepy, these trapdoors and stuff, he had an alarm system. Now, this alarm system went to his room, and it buzzed anytime someone would enter a hallway or start going down staircases or coming up them. It would send a buzz, so he knew where people were, and he knew when you were leaving or coming in. Like, he was creepy. So, he kind of stopped them.
Creepy.
So,
what's that movie, 14 Cameras?
Yes.
Mm. What it sounds like.
Kind of like. Like an ancient version of that. Yes.
14 Cameras was like a high-tech version of...
Of this.
Of H.H. Holmes and the murder castle.
So, okay. So the castle's built. We now know what's in it. So he starts listing ads in the newspaper. He's offering jobs to young women to be like housekeepers. He's also putting out ads for lodging. You know, you stay here, da-da-da. Here's all that we have, you know. But he also puts in an ad that he's a wealthy man looking for a wife. He puts an ad in the newspaper for himself.
Desperate?
Yeah. Now, I didn't mention this earlier, but he has already been married. He's already been married once, and he has a son with the first wife. He's never divorced her. So at one point in his life, he has three wives at once.
Jesus.
Yes. He never divorced any of them, so he's three wives at once.
Isn't that illegal?
Probably not at that
time.
Pretty sure it's illegal.
Now, probably, yes. He starts hiring people. Anybody and everyone who works with him or works for him was required to have a life insurance policy in case anything happened. And when I say happened, I mean he happened. And he kills them. So he can take out their life insurance policy. Now, it's also noted in several articles that once this place is open and running, like, neighbors already noticed that they were seeing women come in, but they were never coming out. Why this was never, like, actually reported or why police never looked into this, I have no idea.
Why he was desperate enough to put an article in the paper but had three wives at the same time and all these women in his castle.
Yeah, I know. Crazy, right? Some men. Gosh.
Gosh darn it.
So, we move up a couple years, 2 years after this place is opened. And 1893, Chicago hosts the World's Fair, which I believe is also known as the Columbia Expedition. Oh. It was just like this big event that's held in the city. Chicago hosted it from May to October. Now, the same time that this comes into play, his fiancée disappears. I'm assuming the fiance that he got from the ad. She disappears. No one knows where she went. You know, just...
We know where she went.
We know where she went. Everyone else apparently did not. So, during the time that this goes on, he has lots of out-of-town victims. You know, they're coming from out of town. You know, no one's really there to question it. You know, there's just so many people going in and out of the city that no one notices. Like, just kind of really a good time to kill people, I guess.
I guess.
Like, because he didn't get caught this entire time. You know, this is where he produces a lot of the skeletons and stuff that he's selling back to medical schools. He's also still doing, you know, the insurance scheme, as we know, but he is an accomplice.
An accomplice.
During this time. And his name was Benjamin Pitzel. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his last name, but we're just going to call him Ben.
Ben.
This is Ben. So his accomplice, Ben. So after the World Fair ends in October of 1893, the economy in Chicago just goes into a slump. It sucks. There's no money coming in and out. People aren't staying at the hotel. Like, he's just
poor
not.
Poor Holmesy.
Yeah. So he decides that he's going to leave the murder castle and travel. Supposedly he's still committing random murders at this time, but no one's tied any to him. Except for the last one. And, you know, he's still doing his insurance scams. But at this point he switches to a horse scam, which I thought this was really bizarre when I started reading it because it just didn't fit him, I felt like. So he ends up in Texas, and he is stealing horses, shipping and selling them in St. Louis.
How do you steal a whole horse?
I don't know.
He took it and rode it. Yeah.
He was stealing horses, and he was making a lot of money from it. Like, he was making
horses. Horses are expensive, like, I know. Honestly.
And he was making bank.
Well, horses were their transportation.
He actually gets arrested for this, though. This is what got him caught the first place. Horses. He was arrested and jailed for the horse scams when he got caught. So he tries to do an insurance scam with his cellmate, Marion Hedgepath. And he just, you know, he's in prison. He has nothing better to do. So he comes up with this insurance scam. He says that he will give some of the money to the cellmate if this cellmate helps Holmes fake the death. Like, fake his death. He gets out on bail, and he's supposed to fake his death, and the guy's supposed to, like, collect the insurance. Well, the insurance company becomes suspicious, and they don't pay Holmes. So the cellmate never got paid.
Yeah.
So he tries to do the scam again, but he does it with Ben, and he actually ends up killing Ben and collecting this $10,000 insurance plan. Later on, he gives about $500 of that to the widow, his widow, his wife. She knew that he was involved in these scams. Well, apparently his children found out. He had 5 children. His children found out. And he was so worried that they would go to police, he actually kills only 3 of the children.
Oh my God.
He killed 3 of his children?
He killed 3 of Ben's children after he murdered Ben because he thought they would go tell police. I don't know why he didn't kill them all.
What about the other two?
I don't know if he just really...
I mean, not trying to, like, promote him killing all 5, but maybe, wouldn't like, they go to the cops?
Well, maybe...
Maybe they were
young.
So scared or just too young. I don't know. But he only kills 3 of them.
Because there's a weak link to every group.
So, the cellmate is super angry. He never received his money. And he actually informs police about the insurance scam.
Okay.
And so this actually gets Holmes arrested in 1894. So, if I'm correct, that's only a year later. He is arrested in Boston, but he is sent to Philadelphia because he is also now tied back to Ben's murder. So he goes on trial for this murder. Well, of course, knowing that he still had, like, the castle in his possession, Chicago police catch wind that he's being tried for another murder, so they search the murder castle. This is when they find all these torture chambers, they find bodies that are so dismembered and decomposed that they actually couldn't tell how many bodies they found.
Oh my God.
So not only was there that many, but they were in such bad condition, they couldn't even tell you how many bodies were actually there.
Hostile.
Yeah. So he confessed to police that there was 28 victims. Now, they tried to search for all these people, and they actually find that some of the people he confessed to killing were still alive. He also is known to confess to his lawyer, 133. Well, after a thorough investigation of the murder castle, Chicago police find at least over 100 remains, with the youngest of the remains that they could piece together being a 6 to 7 year old person, child. So there's, he's given 3 total confessions. They all have had different numbers. That's why his numbers range from as low as 27 to over 200, because there is no solid number. They couldn't put everybody together. He wasn't giving accurate confessions, different numbers to different people. And so a newspaper actually ends up paying him $7,500 for a confession, which I thought, wow, that's a lot. In today's money, they basically paid him $215,000 for a confession, which the confession was actually really off and also gave a different number of victims.
Obviously, so they really, he's not going to give an honest confession. He just wants the money.
Exactly. So they really lost out on that money. So then on May 7th of 1896... 2 years after he's been arrested, he is hung for Ben's murder. He was found guilty, and they hung him.
Well, dang.
And the eerie part about his hanging, which is a little gruesome, is when they hang somebody, it snaps their neck. In his case, it didn't, and he actually hung for 20 minutes, twitching and suffocating, before he actually was pronounced dead. I could
not imagine.
And people watch
suffering.
These.
Suffering.
Yeah.
Nor watching that for 20 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, considering the awful crimes he's committed, I mean, I don't feel sorry for him. But, like,
no.
I don't want to die that way, but I've not also killed, you know, over 200 people.
Right.
Here's something I thought really odd. He requested to be buried in 10 feet of concrete, which they ended up granting because it was like his last request or whatever. But the reason he wanted to is because he wanted to avoid grave robbers because he was scared that they would grave rob him and dissect his body and stuff.
But he was completely okay with doing that to other people.
And that's why I was really shocked that that's why he wanted. So he is buried in Philadelphia.
Why would he want someone to violate him the way he's been violating others?
I don't know, but he requested to be, you know, in 10 feet of concrete, so it didn't happen. And I mean, they did it. So he is actually buried in a cemetery in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and you can actually go to visit his grave. And then I just wanted to read this little quote from him because I thought it was very creepy and just like, what even? So he says, "I was born with the devil in me. I could not help the fact that I was a murderer. No more than a poet can help the inspiration to sing."
That's such an eerie...
like an eerie quote, like, wow, you are messed up.
A monster.
Yeah, like...
no remorse.
No,
absolutely none.
Not. So then my last thing about H.H. Holmes, there was a lot of involvement deaths. So... his cellmate, you guys remember, he tipped off the police on Holmes. He was also an known outlaw, but he was shot by Chicago police. And then, so the prison that Holmes was kept in while awaiting trial in Pennsylvania, the warden of that prison killed himself. Then the DA who argued the case in trial, I read a couple different things. I read that she caught fire, or that they caught fire, and I also read that their home caught fire. Either way, they both say that a picture of Holmes survived.
So creepy.
So, then there is Patrick Quaylen. He was the castle's caretaker after Holmes. He killed himself, and he left a note that only said, "I could not sleep."
That gives me chills.
I know. Isn't that crazy? And then, where is the castle now? So, they actually renamed the castle Holmes Horror Castle. But it actually, so it was turned into this museum about him or whatever. It burned to the ground, completely to the ground, shortly before it was supposed to open. Isn't that very odd? This is where the theories of him faking his death came from, was these.
I have read a lot about people thinking that he faked his death, and I'm a little suspicious, yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay, so now that we've discussed H.H. Holmes, we're going to be diving into Jack the Ripper.
And unfortunately, we don't have any back history of his childhood or anything.
Because no one knows who he is.
We're just going to jump on into his first murder, which happened in West Chapel, London on Friday, August 31st, 1888. And she was a prostitute named Mary Ann Nichols, also by the name of Polly.
Her work name. Her work name's Polly.
She was found by a man named Charles Cross at 3:45 a.m. and her skirt was pulled up to her waist. She had severe abdominal mutilation. The watchman that was on, you know, around the area during the time, he admitted to dozing off on his duty.
So was he asleep during this?
He admitted to also being awake between 3 and 4 in the morning.
So when it happened,
but he still didn't hear anything, so who knows if he was telling the truth or not.
My dude was slumped.
Probably.
He was asleep. He lied.
Probably. And then at 5 in the morning, a stranger just walked up to Patrick, which is the officer who's on site, and said, "Watchman, old man, I believe somebody is murdered down the street."
Okay, but why murdered and not, like, dead or killed or...
Yeah.
To say murder's pretty bold.
Yeah, and the fact that she had her skirt pulled up to her waist, too, like, it could have been a little more than a, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's just bold. That's a bold statement.
Like, did you walk up there and investigate?
So, since no one caught him, 8 days later, the same guy killed again. This time, he killed 47-year-old Annie Chapman. She was found September 8th. Around 5:30 in the morning, so, you know, when it was kind of a little early. She was last seen talking with a man, then 30 minutes later, her body was discovered.
Oh.
She was killed in someone's backyard, in front of a window.
How convenient.
How convenient, and no one saw anything. Again, her body had been dissected with severe abdominal mutilation, her abdomen was open, her uterus was gone, 2/3 of her bladder, and the upper portion of her lady parts.
How specific.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, this...
That's gruesome.
This man dissected her, which is horrifying.
He basically just used her as his own personal cadaver, like somebody else we know.
Her throat was also slashed, so she was almost decapitated. It was that bad, yeah. And after Ann Chapman's murder, they finally named the killer Jack the Ripper, but still didn't know who he was.
So the second victim is how he got his name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 3 weeks later, he killed again. This time they marked it his double kill. So he started at 1 in the morning on September 30th. A prostitute named Elizabeth Stride was found by an international workers' club called Duffield's Yard. Again, no one heard anything. No one saw anything.
Oh, but they just stumbled upon her
body. Because humans are oblivious.
Yeah. Her throat was slit, almost decapitated, but this time there was no mutilation to the body. Maybe someone was coming, so all he could do was slit the throat and he took off. Right. But eyewitnesses Yeah, he got spooked. They did see her earlier with lots of men that evening, as that was her
job.
Then at 1:45 in the morning, so literally 45 minutes after, a 46-year-old prostitute named Catherine Eddowes was found by P.C. Watkins in Mattray Square, and he said she was ripped up like a pig in a market.
Oh, wow.
Her throat was slit, almost decapitated, so kind of like a signature move of Jack. She had severe abdominal mutilation. Her intestines had been drawn out. Her face this time was slashed with crosses and a bunch of weird symbols, which, weird.
Okay, we're getting religious.
Have they ever considered that, like, this might be, like, a cult or something? Like, is that a third conspiracy theory?
Maybe. We'll have to think about that one. Her left kidney was also removed. A couple weeks later, the final murder was committed. This, by far, was the worst. You'll see why in a second. Trigger warning. It's very graphic. This murder happened November 9th, and it was a 25-year-old prostitute named Mary Jane Kelly. She was last seen in the early hours with a strange man who she did let inside of her house.
Okay.
She just letting men up in her house?
Stranger danger.
Right. Didn't your mom ever teach you stranger danger?
That morning, the rent collector came by and discovered her mutilated body. Oh. She was locked in a room, so this means the killer had all the time in the world. Her face was mutilated, pretty much had the same symbols and crosses, plus extra mutilation, extra detail.
Wow.
She had thigh skin removed, she had muscle removed, and in the picture that I saw, you could see her bone, her thigh bone.
Oh, no.
She was also missing internal organs. So, that was the final murder of London. So, let's talk about the psychology behind him. Criminal psychologist decided to kind of creep into his mind and described him as being an anxious, scared, restless man. He had weird fantasies going on in his head and walking around the streets of London at, you know, 1 to 5 in the morning. A lovely lady comes up and asks you. Of course, his fantasies are triggered. It wasn't the killing aspect that he needed, but it was the need to mutilate the bodies.
So kind of like Jeffrey Dahmer, but not mutilation. He didn't like mutilation. He didn't like killing or mutilation of the body. I think he said he liked
just having a body.
Yeah.
He liked having a body, a person, but without needs.
Okay, but not only does it sound like him, but it sounds like our boy, H.H. Holmes.
Yeah.
Like, that was his thing too.
Yeah.
Experts begin to believe that the killer had been some sort of doctor or surgeon because of the ability to cut open a body and remove internal organs, it'd be fine and dandy.
You know who was a doctor?
Who?
Our buddy H.H. Holmes.
Oh my god! Eventually, they started to suspect about 140 different possible killers, which is a very broad...
That's a very broad number.
Broad number.
That's a lot of people to suspect.
Yeah, and it ranged from, as they said, a quack American doctor, up to Queen Victoria's own surgeon, which...
That's pretty, like, up there.
That's a huge suspicion. We talk about the queens. Eventually, they continued researching on a digital projected autopsy, and they came up to realize that it was almost impossible, even for a doctor or surgeon, to kill and mutilate someone in that amount of time that Jack the Ripper did.
So this guy was either, like, the fastest surgeon this world has ever seen, or just wasn't a surgeon and got lucky.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how.
During 1888... London was a huge trade center, so they started thinking maybe someone was mutilating these bodies for their organs to trade them.
Like on the black market, like H.H. Holmes.
Yeah.
Huh.
So after coming up with that detail, a couple years later, detective noticed a New York murder that was similar to Ripper's. But this happened in 1891 in the Lower East Side of New York. Just like London, it was covered with prostitutes and just creepy, shady people.
Sounds like the West Side.
So a couple years later, a detective noticed a New York murder that was similar to Ripper's. And this happened in 1891 in the Lower East Side of New York, which during this time, New York was filled with prostitutes and just some creepy, shady people. Just like Westchapel, London. This murder happened to a 60-year-old prostitute named Carrie Brown.
60-year-old? What? What? I'm sorry. grandmother being a prostitute?
No, she's a godly woman.
She is a woman of God. To imagine a 60-year-old prostitute.
Not this granny. She out here.
She throwing it back.
She was found mutilated by a night clerk at East River Hotel in April of 1891. And witnesses saw her enter a room with a strange man. This might sound a little familiar. Carrie Brown had abdominal mutilations. Mm-hmm. Her intestines were protruded. And she had two large crosses cut on her face.
Huh. You know what? That sounds like our boy Jack.
Sounds like something back in London. This time, the knife was found on the scene.
Oh.
Yeah. Then detectives find yet another murder that happened years after Brown's murder on August 31st of 1894, so about 3 years after the murder. It was 56-year-old Julian Hoffman, and she was found by her poor son, Michael, which I don't know how old he was at this time, but he found her and her throat was slit, so he escaped down the fire escape, which woke up all the neighbors, and someone was able to alert the police, and while they were doing that, Michael was able to chase after and catch the murderer.
Oh, so he caught his mom's murderer.
He caught his mom's
murderer. After just
basically
walking in on her murder.
Yes.
Wow.
The murderer had a knife that was similar to Carrie Brown's, like, on the scene, mm-hmm. and at least four of the London women.
So, was there two copies of this knife if they found the first one at the scene?
That's what I don't know.
Could have been.
Because how likely is it that you have the same exact knife?
If it was found on the scene.
Yeah. So, I don't know if it was the same guy.
I guess it wouldn't be like a grocery store where you could just go buy the same knife.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, I was going to say maybe the store or something.
Although there are many theories on who the Ripper was, we are now going to discuss our top two suspects. And at the end, we will put up a poll on who you think the Ripper was.
It'll be on our Facebook page.
The first suspect was a German immigrant by the name of Carl Fagan Powell. And we're going to just take a second. It's important to know that London was a huge trade center, and criminals would board German immigrant ships to escape Europe and enter the U.S.
So that wasn't like it was an uncommon thing.
Yeah.
That in that area, that was like a real popular thing.
Yeah, it was
thing,
in
like,
and
all
out
criminals.
Of immigrants and a lot of shady criminals and people in general.
Okay.
Carl Fagan Powell was one of those men. Powell told his lawyer that he had a singular disease, which took passion and turned it into murder.
What?
Twisted, right?
He had a disease that made passion into murder?
Yeah, and it made him have no control over himself.
Is he trying to say he, like, blacks out? Or something?
Or is
like...
he trying to, like, plead insanity? Like,
I would probably think that, maybe, because why else are you gonna go out and mutilate, like, seven different women.
Like, yeah, like, okay.
But not only did he say that, but he was also described by as a thief, a compulsive liar, and he had a tendency to use fake identity. So he was just a shady dude all around.
Crazy. Okay.
Powell's own brother told the detectives that he was a merchant seaman. He's been on and off ships, as most German immigrants would at the time. Possibly to escape.
Using it, like, to escape his crime. So, like, he could have stopped in this town in London.
Yeah.
At their port.
Yeah.
Got off during the night, committed these crimes, hopped on his ship, and said, see ya.
Yeah. So, after they found out that very important detail, detectives started to dig into Lloyd's shipping cassette, which are records that basically just hold...
Like, say who's on what ships, or, like, when the ships dock?
Yeah, yeah, it just keeps records of who's going in and out.
Okay.
On what ship. There was a German ship called Rhea, which was Powell's ship, and it appeared to dock on each murder.
So it docked on each of the nights that there was a murder?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so another investigator went to Bremen's public records office to see if he could find any records on Fagan. And he found some.
Oh.
He has records that put him working for a company. I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm so sorry. I'm not even going to try to butcher it.
Okay.
It was a company and it put him on numerous ships going from England to New York, back and forth.
Oh, so he also could have been the New York person.
Yeah. Well, they tried to find documents of him being physically on the Rhea. So all the Rhea records between those that 3 month period, so August through October, are completely gone. They're missing.
They're just missing.
They're missing. So this little theory started going around that Fagan's lawyer suspected the same thing that this current investigator did and was able to get his hands on the documents and take that 3 months worth of evidence.
And make it disappear.
And make it disappear.
He must have paid him some good money. He's just gonna make that disappear.
There's no records of him being in Whitechapel, no nothing. Fagan was arrested for the murders, and he was sent to Sing Sing Prison in New York. And on April 27th, 1896, Carl Fagan was sent to execution by the electric chair. Or as they like to call it, Old Sparky.
They took him to Old Sparky.
He was strapped in at 11 a.m., but they didn't start shocking him till 11:16.
So they waited 16.
They waited 16 minutes to put him to death.
Like, just out of, like, haha, you don't know what I'm gonna do it, like.
I'm in control now.
Like, I could do it in 30 seconds, or in 2 minutes, or in 10 minutes, but you don't know, like, was it, like, I don't know, for suspense?
Were the jurors aren't that mean. They go, all right, take a breath, 3, 2, 1.
Like, they're like, they were just that, like, messed up back in the day?
Well, the funny thing is, after Fagan died, all the Ripper murders stopped.
Hmm. Wow. Probably because they just electrocuted the Ripper.
Probably, hey. But...
Don't be suspicious.
All of this information that I got, you can listen to the documentary that I did. It's on YouTube. Just look up Jack Ripper documentary, and it's by criminals and crime fighters. And it was a really good documentary, let me tell you. They had really good, top-notch investigators.
I have not got to watch this yet, and I'm really excited to.
Yes.
Especially because I know you guys have watched what I'm about to talk about, and I feel like I wish I would have watched it before this episode.
It's interesting.
Now I'm going to watch it afterwards.
Yes.
So what I wanted to talk about was our... good old boy, not so good boy, H.H. Holmes.
Oh, Holmesy.
So, there is also a conspiracy theory that he is Jack the Ripper.
Bum, bum, bum.
His great-great-grandson, Jeff Mudgett, he is the main theorist behind this. Almost every article or story that I found about this theory, like, mentions Jeff Mudgett in it. So he really pushed this theory. Before we jump completely into that, there's other little theories that Holmes faked his death and moved to South America and was growing coffee beans.
I am a strong believer that he at least faked his death. Maybe not the coffee beans, but...
that seems a little off, but everyone believes he faked his death. I watched a little bit about where they actually... exhume his grave. They actually found an empty pine box on top, which is basically a pine coffin. It's what they used back in the day.
Wait, was it empty or?
Yeah, it was empty.
Okay.
So his body wasn't in there. Well, when we discussed earlier about H.H. Holmes, he wanted to be buried in 10 feet of concrete because he was scared of being grave robbed, ironically. So they went ahead and kept digging further. And they eventually hit this concrete and they find his body. Use dental records to identify him. Okay. And it was him. And then I also read in a separate article that they actually did DNA comparison between the body found in Jeff Mudgett, who is supposed to be his great-great-grandson, and it matched. So this was Holmes' body.
Darn it.
So he did not escape death. Sorry to disappoint.
I was so excited that was right. That would have been so cool.
I know. It would have been a great, like,
plot
twist.
Not to promote him, like, running around killing people, but...
but it would have been a plot twist.
Yes.
Would we have caught him as Jack the Ripper? So Jeff Mudgett, has a book called Bloodline, and it outlines his whole theory about why he believes H.H. Holmes is Jack the Ripper. Well, I also decided to go watch his TED Talk about this, which was super fascinating.
So interesting.
I made them watch it. We will post the link of it to our Facebook page. It's only 20 minutes long. It's really not that long, but it is so good.
I swore into a TED Talk.
So he sets up this courtroom feeling, and he, you know, makes all the audience swear in. Alexis sweared
in.
I
sweared in.
I did not swear in.
But you all just laughed at her. Yes.
He had good evidence.
So he used to be an attorney, so he presents this like it's a court case, which I thought for me was like very engaging. Like, just the way he did it, you guys watched it. It was very interesting. Yeah. So he presents, you know, his Exhibit A. He puts the Ripper sketch based on the 13 eyewitnesses to the Ripper murders up, and then he puts up a picture of H.H. Holmes side by side, and they look very, very similar, but we all were able to point out, like, little things that we thought were off.
The mustache was different.
It was a different mustache.
The nose. The
bridge of the nose wasn't quite right, and I felt like the Ripper sketch, the cheekbones were higher. Yeah,
the ears were a little more narrow.
Yes. And so then we're kind of like, okay, probably can't be the same person. Maybe. Then he actually overlays them on top of each other, and oh boy.
Oh my god.
So he takes these pictures of H.H. Holmes and the sketch to a retired FBI investigator and an investigator from the state of Virginia. He has them review these to, like, that sketch versus the picture, and they both come back and say that this is the closest match they had seen in their careers.
That's crazy.
To get that close of a match is pretty
rare.
Yes.
Substantial.
So then his next biggest piece of evidence that I think kind of shook all of us was the handwriting comparison.
Oh, the only difference I saw was the T.
The T was a little bit different.
The T is the only thing that we could tell a difference. It is so freaky. So a lot of people know about Jack the Ripper's Dear Boss letter. So they take this letter where he says, yours truly, at the end, and then signs, you know, Jack the Ripper, and takes a letter that H.H. Holmes wrote, and at the end signs, yours truly. They put them up side by side, and he goes over about how he had an expert whose name is Margaret Webb. She reviewed the handwriting. She came back and professionally said that it was from the same hand.
Believable.
He goes on to tell you that this is not admissible in court. So he's still keeping up, like, this court theme. And so it kind of catches you here and there. So he was like, he talks about how he goes to the University of Buffalo, and he finds out what the police use to make, because handwriting comparisons are a big thing in a lot of capital murder cases. So he finds out what the police are using to be allowed to use this in court. And the University of Buffalo creates a system that compares similarities in handwriting. And they submit it to this computer, and the computer comes back and says that the similarity percentage between Jack the Ripper's Dear Boss letter and this letter written by H.H. Holmes is a 96.75% similarity.
So
almost 100. Like, almost 100. That is so close. I mean, 96%.
Yeah, that
it might as well be the same.
Might as well.
You know what didn't get it all the way to 100%?
What?
The freaking T's.
Oh my god.
That's it.
It was the T.
It was the T's. That was the difference that the computer agreed with us, probably. He also goes on to talk about how he has gone to so many different historians from all over the United States, people that study, you know, H.H. Holmes, you know, covers the murders and all this stuff. Nobody can find any paperwork that proves H.H. Holmes was in the U.S. during the time of the Rippers.
I think it's so crazy how both Carl Fagan Powell and H.H. Holmes have missing documents.
Yes.
Between those years.
Between those
the time
years.
Yeah. He, what if too, like, has no paperwork that can actually put him there. Jeff Mudgett also goes on to explain that in a couple years after the Ripper spree, he writes a letter to someone, and I cannot remember who it was, and he notes how hard it was to find his favorite newspaper in London.
What?
Yeah. Wait, so, like, what? he likes this certain newspaper. I can't remember the name of, like, it was, like, the Columbus Dispatch of their time.
Mm-hmm.
And he sends a letter to somebody, and he notes in that letter how hard it is to find this newspaper company in London. Like, he had been there.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Were you in London, H.H.?
Holmes?
Holmesy boy?
I don't know. Was he? Because like he wasn't here, according to historians. He was not in the U.S.
Hmm. The world may never know.
The world will never know who Jack the Ripper is. So we're also going to be posting some of the pictures that we talked about. Like, so we will also be posting pictures on our Facebook of things that we discussed about. So I'll be posting the picture of H.H. Holmes' murder castle. We'll be doing the sketch of Jack the Ripper versus the picture of H.H. Holmes that you guys can see. And we will also be doing a poll on our Facebook where you can vote and let us know, do you think H.H. Holmes is the Ripper, or
is it Carl Fagan Powell as the Ripper?
Or do you have your own conspiracy theory? If you do, tell us.
Please share with us. We will possibly look into it.
Spiral down the deep rabbit hole of conspiracy theories.
See what you guys bring to the table.
Also, we will be dropping hints of next Sunday's episode
on our Instagram and Facebook. So if you don't already, please go like and follow those at Planet of Mystery.
And Planet of Mystery 2020 on the Instagram.
So travel back with us to Planet of Mystery next Sunday for our next episode.